Okay, we're going to keep on plowing through. If somebody needs to step out, just go ahead and step out. But let's go ahead and do our Coastal Habitat Protection Plan update and Executive Order 80 update. And Jimmy and Jacob, come on up. Jimmy, how's your daughter doing?
Great.
Good, good. Where is she now? Columbus, Ohio. Okay. Good enough.
Good afternoon. Sorry that we're the last thing on the agenda, keeping you here. So we're going to go. Okay. We're not last. We're going to go as fast as we can. I'm Ann Deaton. For those that don't know me, I'm with the Habitat and Enhancement Section. I'm a Habitat Program Manager, and I'm a lead for the DMF in terms of the CHIP Steering Committee. And I have Jimmy Johnson here, who's the CHIP Coordinator at the DEQ level and works for Albemarle Pamlico National Estuary Partnership. And we've got Jacob Boyd over here, which I think you know is my section chief. So we're here today to give you an update that here today to give you an update on the CHIP plan. And first of all, so you keep in mind where this came from. It originated out of the Fishery Reform Act, just like the fishery management plans. So it is statute required by law. And that was a recognition that we can't have healthy stocks if we don't address habitat and water quality issues. So this is the opportunity for the Marine Fishery Commission to address habitat and water quality issues. We've talked a lot about that, and we say it's not under our authority, but this is a mechanism for the commissioners to have input on that. The statute specifically says the plan includes recommended actions to protect and restore fish habitat, that they shall adopt rules, and that has to be done by all three of the environmental regulatory commissions, Environmental Management Commission, Coastal Resource Commission, and Marine Fishery Commission, and that they review the plan and update it as needed on five-year rotations. So we're here today because we're up at that point again. It's been 3 years since the last one, and we're starting our planning and drafting because it does take a while. The mechanism that we get approvals through the process, whereas in FMPs you have your fishery advisory committees, we have a CHIP steering committee. And the CHIP steering committee is comprised of two commissioners from those three commissions. So for the MFC, your representatives are Pete Carnegie and Martin Posey right now, and they have done a great job so far. We have two representatives from the other. So they serve as giving the staff for those associated divisions input and direction, and also they are a liaison back to their full commissions. You can do it. Okay. I think I already said this because I was going so fast. So I told you about the recommended plans. The three commissions have to be involved. Go to the next one. So what is it? It's a compilation of the science summarizing what is the value of our coastal habitats. What's their status? What are the man-made or nature-based impacts to them? That's the justification to support any recommended actions. So the plan itself has a lot of the source document that has all that information with references and then recommended actions. In the past, those actions were a little bit general, and then once the plan was approved, we moved on to more specific implementation plans. In this last plan, we decided to focus our efforts to be more effective, so we had four priority issues. Those were increasing oyster restoration, increasing living shorelines, developing habitat metrics so we can assess how we are doing, if things are getting better or worse, and reducing sedimentation impacts in tidal creeks. Probably the most important of that in terms of habitat and water quality is sedimentation. is probably also the most difficult because the sources come, they're non-point from many, many different sources. So while we haven't made much management changes regarding sedimentation rules, but we have gotten a lot of research going and in place. And one study I was going to mention is that ECO did a sedimentation study of three creeks in Carteret and Onslow County, and they did find that the rate of sedimentation exceeded the rate of sea level rise. So their conclusion was that there is an infilling of tidal creeks in the upper part. There's another study going on in more detail looking at how that affects fish and the habitats. So once we get that information, which should be pretty soon, we can maybe make more actions on that. So the other priority action that we have made considerable success on is oyster restoration. The division has two ways of doing that. One is with oyster sanctuaries, which are large subtidal oysters constructed in Pamlico Sound. We currently have 15 of those, including one that was done in the past 3 years. And so thanks to support from the legislature, support from this commission, and support from North Carolina Coastal Federation, we were able to construct about 40 acres of oyster sanctuary over the last 3 years. So that's substantial funding because it is expensive. It cost about, I think they allocated about $1 million a year for the last 3 years to the division to work on this. So Swan Island is the dot there with the red arrow. That's where they've been working. So as you can see, they kind of go around the rim of Pamlico Sound. That's the area of focus because that's where we've lost most of our oyster habitat. Then the other tool is culch planting, which are smaller sites that are scattered throughout the waters from north to south in open waters. So they provide temporary habitat while also providing oysters in open harvest areas to help the economy. In addition to actually constructing more oyster habitat, the implementation plan called on increasing the efficacy of that activity because it is expensive and it is a big investment. So we want to put them where they will be successful and work. And so the implementation plan talked about siting tools and monitoring. So on that map, on the right under siting tools, our staff has worked on developing a habitat suitability index. The red areas indicate the less likely of being successful, green most likely being successful. And if you look at that map carefully, the black squares are oyster sanctuaries. So we just now are getting the suitability map, but fortunately most of them are in green and yellow zones. And that was done using existing data from the division's mapping, historical mapping, water quality data, circulation data. Monitoring was also an action to ramp up so we can determine success. So on the left, you can see a side scan image of Swan Island that they've been working on for the last 3 years. And the red here in this picture is the relief. So red is the highest, and then it drops down to the green zone. So you can see how they construct that. Okay, another priority issue is to develop habitat metrics. We've started doing that. The division has a draft intertidal oyster sampling protocol that's partially done. We're excited that we're going to use the shellfish bottom mapping data, which they finally completed the whole coast, and we're going to use that to target some priority areas to follow on a more regular basis. We're going to be doing this more rapidly with drones and side scan where necessary. While that is falling on the division and the oyster sanctuaries, other habitat monitoring falls on other divisions and other sections, so we've had a lot of cooperation. And one of the best examples is mapping, monitoring of submerged aquatic vegetation. So APNEP has been really, without their support, we would not be where we are with SAV. We've been able to map the whole coast two times, and they just did it the highest Lenny grasses this summer in 2019. And that's thanks to APNEP putting forward funding, pulling together a team of folks from all the different DEQ divisions, as well as researchers, other agencies, and DOT, getting DOT to take the imagery at a very affordable price. The Division of Marine Fisheries takes the lead on ground truthing, but we also had like a lot of assistance from the other divisions in APNEP. And we did that this summer. And right now we have a staff person that we hired thanks to the department's support. They gave us some funding to hire someone to do the photo interpretation of that imagery. So we'll be able to see how that grass is faring up or down. The last priority issue I was going to mention is living shorelines. Most of you know what a living shoreline is. It's just an alternative form of shoreline stabilization where you need to do that, where there's erosion. Instead of a bulkhead, you can do a non-vertical structure with rock, oysters. There's several different ways. You put that out in the water slightly and either plant marsh or it breaks the wave energy enough so marsh recruits. It's much better for fish habitat. So the main progress we've made in the last 3 years is we have now have a general permit that is a unified DCM permit, aligns with the Corps permit so that a property owner can just easily get a permit to put in a living shoreline just as easily as they could a bulkhead. Before it was harder. So now we think that's an incentive to help see more of these get in place. We've continued with outreach and click that. Some research has been going on. Okay, in this picture you can see oyster shell bags. Oyster shell bags can be very successful. The picture this on the left side of that photo is oysters after 2 years on top of oyster shell bags. On the right is what those shell bags look like when they're first deployed in a plastic mesh. Another technique, though, that's being looked at that could be really beneficial is using a new method with biodegradable material. So it's burlap that can be dipped in concrete and made into many different shapes and forms. Can be used as a wave break, just like instead of the oyster shells. Then you don't have to worry about A, finding oyster shells, and B, plastic in the environment. So the idea is that oysters will recruit onto this, marsh will grow into it or around it, and you'll have a more resilient shoreline. The other thing I was going to mention, it will improve water quality. There was something else about these. I don't know.
Sedimentation?
Yeah, marsh. No, I'll keep going. Go one more. That's an example of one of those structures. After it's been out a while and at a very low tide, and you can see the oysters growing all over it, I remembered. So that technique actually started for shellfish leasing. So that same material can be used to make bags and cages that people put oyster spat into. So it has multi-purposes. What we really wanted to let you know is that we're starting the 2021 revision. And we've met a few times with the CHIP team, which is the agency staff of the divisions that help us pull the plan together, and the CHIP steering committee, which are those commissioners that I mentioned. So we've decided that focusing on a few key priorities really was helpful. We're going to do that again. We want to pick actions that are very strategic with co-benefits, given climate change, so ones that have coastal resiliency benefits, and make the actions that are in the plan more specific with deadlines and that are still attainable so we have more commitment to getting them accomplished. So this is just a basic sketch of what the process is. First, select those priority issues. We're going to start by drafting up those issues and then backfill the source document to provide the appropriate scientific justification for any actions that come out of that. So we have met with the team and the steering committee. We do have some priority issues, although we're here, you know, to get any comment if there's something that anybody else feels struggling about. And then we'll be drafting those issue papers. That'll be done by a variety of staff at the different divisions. Hopefully be done mid-summer. And then we want to spend a lot of time because we want more specific actions that can be difficult, you know, when you start talking about land development actions. We want to spend more time building support within the divisions, within the commissions, and with the public. Then we want to get the plan approved, and then we'll just get straight to work on getting those actions implemented. This is just a rough timeline, which we can skip. Our ultimate goal is spring 2021. We'll be back to the commissions to get final approval. So actually, we'll probably be bringing the draft issue papers when they're done in the end of the summer, fall, for all the commissions to weigh in on, then back out the plan for to take it to the commissions to ask to take it out for public comment in November, and then for final approval in spring. There should be one more. Oh, yeah. So the four issues that we have right now is to, one, work on submerged aquatic vegetation protection and restoration with a focus on water quality. So SAV, unlike oysters, is not as easy to just plant it and it will grow. The limiting factor is water quality. So if we can get cleaner water, clearer water, we can get the grass to just expand on its own. So there are other things that can affect SAV, so we'll look at those as well, but the focus would be on water quality. And because it's the expertise, to get the right amount of expertise, we input on how to do this. We plan on having a technical workshop with experts, bringing in Chesapeake Bay folks who've been quite successful, and really get a good technical document together. Second, wetland protection and enhancement. So we want to continue with the living shoreline idea, but there could be more things we do. It's not just about living shorelines. We want to protect and look at what's happening to all of our wetlands under various sea level rise scenarios. The third is to really look at environmental rule compliance. We've heard a lot of stories that if we just enforce the rules we have, you know, that would be a great gain for habitat, particularly buffers. So we want to flesh that out, see what we can learn, and then tied to that is habitat monitoring. So we now have metrics, but we got to get some resources out there so we can monitor and see how the existing rules we have are affecting habitat condition. And then the fourth thing there is to reduce impacts from wastewater inflow and infiltration, because you know, when infiltration is when the pipes get old and they get cracks and the rainwater goes into them, it overloads the system breaks, and then you hear in the news, oh, you know, this wastewater treatment broke or this lift station in Hewlett Creek broke, and all that raw sewage is then going into the creeks. And it just adds up. There's a lot of them on the coast, and the division directors actually brought this up as something they'd like to see us address. So this is just an update. There are no action items for you all at this time. You guys have already started that ball rolling in getting more engagement with the other commissions, the EMC and CRC. So if you remember your last meeting, you suggested writing a letter to those commissions, and that was sent, saying that you have, you know, a lot of habitat water quality concerns, especially came up in light of the Blue Crab plan. So it's on the radar. We just want to get them to really, we're really going to focus on that connection between their actions for development and water quality and how that's affecting our ability to manage fisheries. I also wanted to just thank Mike Blanton for coming to our Habitat and Water Quality Committee meeting and the CHIV Steering Committee meeting. And I'll tell you, that makes a huge difference when fishermen, in this case a commissioner fisherman, that made a huge impact on the members of those both of those committees. So, congratulations. You made me happy. And I will add that one of the Habitat Water Quality advisors sent me an email after that meeting and said it was eye-opening to hear from the fishermen, and it has motivated him to really try and figure out what's going on in Albemarle Sound. So, thank you, and we hope you keep coming.
He wasn't wearing that hat, was he?
I think he was. So that's it for my part. We're going to try to get these papers written and come back to you in 2020. So unless there's questions, I was going to turn it over to Jacob, who's going to talk about EO 80 and what we've been doing with that. And it kind of ties into the chip, as he's going to explain.
Any questions right now, Van?
No.
Go ahead. Yes, please.
Yeah, I appreciate the small token of recognition there. I'll try to say shortly and briefly what I've said at the CHIP meeting and at the, you know, Habitat meetings and stuff is that, and to reiterate the fact that the conditions on the Albemarle Sound are not what they once were. You know, I've seen the staggering effects of a plethora of things sort of combine into what we now have in the Albemarle Sound. You know, I've been doing a lot of reading on things, and it's a big, huge interest to me to identify these problems and to try to help bridge the gaps that we have in these processes to get things moving forward in the right direction. That place in the world is very special to me. It, you know, everybody has their little place in the world, and that's kind of mine, and that's where I grew up at, and it means a lot, and it would mean a lot that that ecosystem come back together to what it once was, because it was a powerful place at one point in time that produced a lot of animals that, you know, supported the fisheries, both recreational and commercial. It was a very enjoyable place at one time. Now you don't see the boat traffic down there. You know, when I come down here in the lower part of the state, it's bustling with activity. But up there, it's almost non-existent at times, where you're there and there's nobody there enjoying it, and then you have issues come along like these huge algal blooms that are further deterring people from using our waterways. And it's disheartening, because I know what the potential of that place really is. So yeah, I'm very encouraged to move forward and hear more about, you know, what we can do and the solutions that we can come up with to try to bring everybody together and to maybe make progress. And it's a long-term thing. We didn't get here overnight to the condition that we're in right now. So I don't expect it to happen overnight that everything's going to clear up, but I am here to be the whistleblower to say, listen, you know, I know firsthand that what it could be is not what it is today, and that's kind of where I'm at with it. Thank you.
And Mike, thank you for your interest on that. We need more people like you. Appreciate that. Okay, Jacob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to reiterate, Ann did a great job summarizing where we've been and where we're going with the CHIP. I would like to reiterate a little bit of the changes that we would like to see as we work through this next revision. We really want to take a collaborative approach with the other commissions and this commission to really, from the front end, out of the issue papers and recommendations that we will be developing over the next few months, have some recommendations for rulemaking as well, to take from the beginning to all the commissions, to, as Commissioner Blant was just saying, you know, all the upland uses are tied to the coastal habitats and the water quality, and we can do all we can do to protect the coastal habitats, but if we don't address some of the other issues, you know, there's still going to be problems. So we're trying to really work collaboratively at every step of this process with you guys and the other commissions to really start trying to address some of these issues. So I'm just going to quickly give an update on Governor Cooper's Executive Order 80, which I will refer to as EO 80. From here on out. And just so if y'all had any concerns, I think this proves that I do some pretty cool stuff outside of shellfish leases. So I didn't know if y'all were concerned for me after yesterday. But Governor Cooper's EO 80 is North Carolina's commitment to address climate change and transition to a clean energy economy. So I can't take credit for the presentation today. This has been updated and given by Deputy Assistant Secretary for Environment Sushma Masemore, who has been leading the charge for the department. I would like to give a shout out to Ann and Jimmy and Casey Knight, who's here, who's been, they've all been working very diligently on trying to complete this, the task from the executive order and implement that throughout some of our own department goals. There we go. So in October 2018, Governor Cooper signed the EO80, which supports the goals of the 2015 Paris Agreement and honors the state's commitment to the U.S. Climate Alliance. EO80 commits North Carolina cabinet agencies to addressing climate change in their programs, policies, and operations to better support the health and well-being of its citizens. The various sections of EO80, which include work from all of the cabinet agencies, the clicker is not being, there we go. So one of the things that the Executive Order 80 created was the Climate Change Interagency Council, which is comprised of the secretaries and their designees of each cabinet agency and is responsible for upholding EO 80. So our secretary again is the chair of this council, and so they recommend and update goals and actions to meaningfully address the climate change, develop programs. There's been a lot of stakeholder input with goals being achieved over this last year or so. So one of the sections that really has involved our time a lot is Section 9, which is Climate Change, Science, Impacts, and Risk and Resiliency. So under this section, it directs DEQ to develop the NC Climate Risk Assessment and Resiliency Tool to support communities and climate resilient planning, and also instructs all agencies to incorporate climate hazards and impacts into their everyday programs and operations. So basically, it directs all state agencies to how we can incorporate climate change impacts and hazards into our programs, as well as local communities and outreach to do resiliency work. So all of this is going to be, we've, again, had a very aggressive timeline over the last year or so to all of this is going to go into the Risk and Resiliency Plan, which is to be completed of March 2020. So here is the strategy of how they've been doing the Risk Assessment and Resiliency Plan. So agencies have been working diligently over the last year or so to complete these goals with the upcoming deadlines. So the Department Environmental Quality, is along with the newly created North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency, have been lead on these goals and these issues, getting input from stakeholders from multiple workshops and meetings. So they started with workshops on the coast in Wilmington and Elizabeth City, followed by workshops in the Piedmont and Mountain regions. So here's just kind of looking at what has been done and what's going to working on in the future. So as I said, we'll be completing the Climate Assessment and Resiliency Plan in March 2020, and then continued work to hazard mitigation and resiliency planning throughout the state. So one of the groups that has been working on this quite a bit was the Natural and Working Land Stakeholder Group. So given the significant contribution of natural and working lands to potential carbon goals for the state of North Carolina, the governor's office and the department invited interested agencies and organizations to participate in a discussion about how to prioritize and engage natural and working lands in activities that reduce carbon loss and enhance carbon sequestration and storage. So this work group was actually convened and created just before the Executive Order 80 was signed, and after that, it kind of, the group evolved into also looking at resiliency benefits of ecosystems and natural infrastructure. So basically, looking where carbon sequestration and also the co-benefits of resilience. So we quickly split into various subcommittees. You can see the focused areas, floodlands and wetlands, which would be fresh water, fresh wetlands, and Pocosin wetlands, coastal habitats, which we have been involved with, agriculture, forestry, urban, and we have developed a plan to make recommendations and target priorities that both help to decrease the carbon levels through carbon sequestration and less carbon loss, but also create more resilient ecosystems, which in turn create more resilient communities. So, as I said, our Coastal Habitat Subcommittee, which again, Ann and Jimmy and Casey have been on working a lot. So we prioritize actions for coastal habitats that will increase carbon sequestration and resilience to climate change and sea level rise. So we started with a lot of the goals that are already outlined in the CHIP and also APNEP's Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan. Because as I said yesterday, we're not big fans of reinventing the wheel. So we really wanted to see the goals and the priorities that were already in place just kind of as a starting point. We made 9 different recommendations, which we're currently working on to get incorporated into the plan, which will also evolve into a standalone document, a report that the Natural Working Lands Committee will create. But the top 3 were coastal habitat protection incentives for all stakeholders, including local governments and private and public stakeholders, looking at habitat migration corridors. So this is, again, one of those cross-sectional where we can utilize a lot of the science that we have to look at where some of these marsh migration corridors will be, but unless we have work with the upland uses, you know, that we really need to make that connectivity. And then incorporation of climate change and sea level rise into our restoration efforts and planning processes. So I think this is a really important one to ensure that we are incorporating the best available science and data for climate change into all of our activities, including restoration activities and protection activities. And so, as Ann spoke about a little bit before, the synergies between the EO80 and the CHIP, so it's actually been really good timing and coincided well with kind of where we're going with the priorities for the CHIP and kind of how we want to kind of, I believe Director Murphy said, reinvigorate the CHIP yesterday, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're really trying to, you know, a lot of awesome work has gone into this over the last 15 or so years, and we really want to continue that work, bring it to light, and then continue to add to it. So a lot of the Coastal Habitat Subcommittee recommendations included, as I said, many from the CHIP, and all of the recommendations will be included in the final report, and we will build a lot of the, we had a really good team, the Coastal Habitat Subcommittee of subject matter experts, some of the best, I think, in the country, and we're going to continue the work with it and use that as a basis for some of the issues we'll be diving into with the CHIP. And with that, I will direct you to the website. There's a lot of great information. There's some presentations on there that Sushma and other folks have given over the last year if you're interested in finding out more.
Okay. Any questions of Jacob or anybody? Great. Okay. Jimmy, you just there for arm candy or something? Hood ornament? Okay. Well, thank you all for your work. It seems like now it's more important than ever. Please keep it up. Thank you very much.